Chapter 8 A House Devout. Braylon Jenkay mostly kept to himself that day. House Doerden had been called out to supply a patrol group in the caverns outside of Menzo Berenzon. By edict of the ruling council, all such groups were to be headed by a noble of the house. However, like any rule in Menzo Berenzon, it had translated to the various houses as more of a suggestion than a literal command. And predictably, none of the Zorlarans nor Tiago Beenri had been so inclined. And so Braylon had been declared a noble of the bastard house. In House Doerden, it was as simple a matter as Tiago and Sarabel claiming it to be so, apparently. There was no royal family, after all, with a Beenri and several Zorlarans all laying claim to the title of noble, to say nothing of the surface elf who served as the matron mother of House Doerden. Or the two Armgos, Tosin and the half-drow Dumwheel, who had also been granted nobility. Since Braylon had come to House Doerden at the wish of Jarlaxle, who was afforded great latitude in the matter by Matron Mother Beenri, and who, no doubt, would serve as a major noble in the house should he decide to reside there, it was only fitting, said Tiago and Sarabel, that Braylon be given the honor in his stead. Of course, the real reason the houses were working around the edict of the ruling council was that none of the house nobles, indeed few nobles in all the city other than perhaps that crazed Malagdorl Armgo creature, wanted any part of the extra city patrols. The tunnels were thick with demons, and the ultimately deadly Demogorgon, and if reports were true, other demon lords, hunted out there somewhere. The mission was doubly dangerous for Braylon. He had no allegiance to any of his dozen Doerden companions, nor they to him. They were common soldiers from several different houses, sent to serve in the Doerden ranks as several of the matron mothers tried to keep their eyes attuned to the happenings in Matron Mother Beenri's lackey house. Braylon doubted that any of the soldiers accompanying him would make a move against him. No one outside his or her matron mother's protection would willingly invoke the wrath of Jarlaxle. But if the situation arose where a demon had gained the upper hand over Braylon, should he expect assistance? He doubted that. So he remained among the main group of his patrol, sending others out to walk point and envisioning an escape route with every corridor they traversed. He also made a mental note to speak with Jarlaxle. He wasn't supposed to be a noble of House Doerden and wanted nothing to do with such an honor. As he truly wanted nothing to do with Menzo Berenzon, a place he had escaped years before. He was of Bregan de Earth, and the entire purpose of putting him in the house was to give Jarlaxle inauspicious eyes in the fledgling house, which would surely be in the middle of any excitement within the city. Braylon reminded himself all the time that he just had to survive until Jarlaxle returned. He was confident that Jarlaxle would put the upstart Tiago in his place. Fortunately, the House Doerden patrol encountered no monsters that day out in the wilds of the Underdark, and they returned to Menzo Berenzon with not a blade drawn in alarm. Hold close until we reach the compound, Braylon ordered his soldiers, when a trio of recruits started to break off from the main group. The two men, of minor houses, and a woman of Barrison del Armgo looked back at Braylon doubtfully, then ignored him entirely and moved off down a side alley leading to the stench streets. A flustered Braylon stood with hands on hips, watching the mutinous commoners melt into the shadows. He thought to shout a warning that he would inform Tiago of their impudence, but he held his tongue. He wasn't a real noble of House Doerden, or of any house for that matter. He was a houseless rogue whose only claim to authority was because Jarlaxle had taken him into Bregan de Earth. In Menzo Berenzon, at this troubled time, that meant he had no claim to authority at all. He was reminded of that fact when the remaining commoners laughed. Braylon sharply turned on one in particular, a young priestess formerly of House Fay Branch, who had been offered to House Doerden mostly because she had been dismissed from Arak Tinnelith for her ineptitude, and so had become an embarrassment to Matron Mother Beertan Fay. "You think there will be no consequences?" he asked the woman as convincingly as he could manage. In fact, Braylon knew there would be none. She just smiled at him, and before he could further chastise her, another group, five of them this time, simply walked off the other way. "Is there even a House Jenkay remaining in the city?" the Fay Branch woman asked, her eyes on the new deserters. "Does it matter?" Braylon angrily retorted, Am I to expect Tiago or the Zorlorans to take up your cause? She replied without hesitation. They have pointed you out of convenience and resent your presence in their house. They think you Jarlaxle's spy, and of course you are. Then you would be wise to fear me, Braylon countered. For that makes me valuable to Jarlaxle, does it not? The woman seemed less sure suddenly, as did the other three of the patrol group remaining with Braylon. You are confused, and with good cause, Braylon said to the four. He was trying to be somewhat conciliatory here, but also determined to show no sign of weakness. What is this House Doerden? What future might it hold for any of us? Trust me when I tell you that I remain as tentative as any of you. We are pawns of powerful matron mothers, all of us. And our current abode, this House Doerden, is viewed as an abomination by many of the powerful houses. But under the protection of Matron Mother Bayenri, the young woman of House Fay Branch reminded him, that is no small thing. Allied with your house, another added, and he, along with yet another, nodded their agreement at the reminder of the Matron Mother's protective shadow. That is no small thing, true, Braylon admitted. But for how long? You should ask the Matron Mother, said the Fay Branch priestess, and she ended with a wicked smile. I am certain that she will welcome your questions. Another of the soldiers, the other female remaining, snickered, but one of the men seemed less amused and revealed that he was far more concerned with Braylon's point when he asked, What of Bregan d'Irth? What of them? Do you plan to continue to pretend that you are not of Jarlaxle's band? The drow, an older warrior, pressed. We all know. And we know, too, that the cadre of nobles of House Doerden do not look with favor upon Jarlaxle or his minions, said the other male. Tiago is Bayenri, and House Bayenri supports Jarlaxle's endeavors, of course, Braylon said. And House Orlaren is not at war with Bregan d'Irth. Not the houses, but these particulars, the male replied. Tiago is Bayenri, true, but he has no love for Jarlaxle or any of Jarlaxle's band. None of them do. They would have cared not at all if you did not return to House Doerden, said the Fay Branch woman. And so perhaps I will not care at all when Matron Mother Bayenri looks away from them long enough to allow those who hate this incarnation of House Doerden to overrun your compound, said Braylon. And where will you turn in that event? It all depends what you are offering, said the older male fighter. Braylon welcomed their obvious intrigue. He understood that many of the commoners of House Doerden would be looking for a way out if an attack came. They knew their own former houses wouldn't help them. Any attack on House Doerden would surely result from a powerful alliance, likely one that included House Barrison del Armgo, second only to House Bayenri. What might House Fay Branch or the scattered refugees of House Orlaren do in that event? He knew he had to let the matter drop, determined not to get too far ahead of anticipated events. He had planted a seed among these four. Let the whispers of a planned assault on the Doerden compound fester, and they would come to him begging. Bregan d'Irth could offer them an escape route. All other roads would lead only to death or worse. Braylon looked at the older warrior and chortled. The eight who deserted us assured their participation in the next Doerden patrol. He said. Deserted you mean, the Fay Branch priestess said. And with a laugh, she moved to the corner of a building, leaning into the alleyway as if she too was thinking of leaving. Braylon didn't much like her. If it came to an escape with Bregan d'Irth, he decided, he would invite that one along, then kill her as soon as she believed herself free from the disaster of House Doerden. As you wish, he started to say. But he mumbled out the last two words as the priestess's expression changed to surprise. The others noticed it too. All eyes went to that Fay Branch woman. She sucked in her breath, eyes going wide, as she jerked back just a bit. Then the source of her discomfort became clear, as the tip of a huge spear exploded out of her back, pieces of lung and heart still attached. Into the air she lifted, her assailant still unseen, and with a flick of the spear shaft she was flung from the weapon to bounce off the structure across the alleyway and flop grotesquely onto the boulevard. And then came her assailant, huge and powerful, eight-legged and two-armed. The four remaining drow gasped in unison at the sight of the mighty Drider and drew their weapons as one. But before any combat could be joined, the air filled with stinging bees, darts from hand crossbows. Braylon and the others, for all their agility, armor, and clever movements, could not escape the swarm. Braylon was hit several times, and he felt the burn of poison immediately. Being of Bregan d'Aerth, he had been trained in resisting the sleep potion. Not so for one of his companions, who slid down onto the street. "Form and run," he told the other two. They started for him, the older male moving well, but the remaining woman strode sluggishly, fighting the call of the poison with every step. She surely wasn't moving swiftly enough to escape the Drider. It didn't really matter, though, Braylon realized. The trap had been well coordinated, and every route was blocked now by Driders backed by drow. "Malarney," Braylon mumbled under his breath. That house of vicious fanatics was known for its Driders, and no fewer than four of the abominations skittered out around the trapped patrol. Four Driders backed by drow soldiers against three drow. Braylon glanced around, expecting a second barrage of poison darts, and saw just one possibility for escape, back the way they had come. Only a single Drider and a single drow enemy had come out that way. If they could move swiftly and decisively, he, at least, might be able to slip past and run free. He turned to his companions just in time to see the older warrior bring his sword to bear on the slumping, sluggish woman. Braylon realized the man had not been struck at all by any of the darts. "Second house," the older warrior cried to the attackers as he cut his companion down. "I serve Matron Mother Miss Barris." And so Braylon Jankay knew he was alone. He turned and sprinted at the lone Drider, dived into a roll to avoid a flying hand crossbow dart, and came up into a sudden charge, his swords working together to turn the creature's thrusting spear aside, out to his left. He disengaged his right hand from the parry and leaped up and ahead, stabbing furiously and finding some measure of satisfaction at least when his blade entered the belly of the large half-arachnid creature. But Braylon was struggling even as he retracted his blade, as filaments filled the air around him and his opponent magically coagulating into a web. Braylon growled and rubbed his thumb across the ring on the index finger of his left hand, enacting the magic, just a small spark, but one that lit the web even as it formed. The Bregan d'Aerth scout, knowing what was coming, ducked under his protective powafwi, and the Drider shrieked in sudden, stinging pain. Then shrieked again as Braylon scrambled across the beast itself, running along its bent spider legs, his second sword coming in hard to slash the Drider's chest. Braylon leaped away, thinking to sprint off into the shadows, but where he landed was not the boulevard, as he had expected, but a deep hole into which he tumbled, rolling and skidding to the bottom. Even as he managed to recover from that shocking descent, Braylon looked up to see the hole ringed by drow. Half a dozen hand crossbows aimed his way, a trio of wizards and another two priestesses already into spellcasting. He had nowhere to run. "You are caught!" one drow warrior cried out, his red eyes flashing. The older male of Braylon's group moved up beside that one, glanced down at Braylon, and snickered. "You will not replace her," High Priestess Kiri Zorlaren said to her younger sister. Kiri grabbed Matron Mother Darthir by the arm and thrust her forward. The confused surface elf, looking as always as if she had partaken of far too much Feywine, stared blankly in Sarabel's direction while not actually looking at the priestess. "Save yourself the disappointment and dismiss that thought now," Kiri finished. She spun Dahlia to face her and gently stroked the dazed elf's face. "She is pretty, is she not? The perfect plaything."
"She is the matron mother of House Doerden," Sarabel managed to gabble.
"She is matron mother Baenri's toy and nothing more, you silly child," Kiri corrected. "Is that why you are so stupid as to believe that you are destined to lead House Doerden? Because you believe that this creature from the sunlit world is somehow taken seriously among the matron mothers?"
"Quite the opposite," Sarabel said. "I believe it because Darthir is not."
But Kiri laughed at her.
"Then why do you suppose that you will replace her? Do you think the rules that apply to the other houses have any meaning here, in this abomination called House Doerden?"
"No, because they do not," Sarabel argued.
I am the wife of Tiago Banri, and so I am Banri, and so I am favored, Kiri's laughter stopped her. Understand this, my young and foolish sister. When Matron Mother Darthir falls, as surely she will, it will be because Matron Mother Banri is wise enough to no longer afford this Iblith her protection. In that event, Matron Mother Banri will have turned House Do'Urden over to Matron Mother Xerith most of all. And which of us do you suppose our great mother might decide is most worthy to serve as matron mother of House Do'Urden in her continuing absence? Sarabel didn't answer, but silently reminded herself not to put too much stock into Kiri's predictions. Something was wrong here and out of kilter. Sarabel had not heard from matron mother Xerith since the fall of Cusor Lauren. Rumors said that Xerith was hiding in the Underdark, under the protection of, or at least with information supplied by, Bregan D'Earth. If that is the case, then Matron Mother Xerith will return, she said meekly. She will not, Kiri taunted. You will likely never see our mother again in this city. Her ways have long been gossiped about unfavorably by the other matron mothers. And now that Cusor Lauren has failed, more than one matron mother will think Matron Mother Xerith a fine target for earning them the favor of the Spider Queen. Our path is to hide under the banner of Do'Urden. Zorlaren is dead in Menzo Berenzon. The sooner you understand that, the better your chances are of surviving. She paused and grinned wickedly, making sure that Sarabel was listening very intently before clarifying. Of surviving my rule. Sarabel left that meeting more shaken than she had been in many 10 days. She had just started to find solid ground beneath her feet, had just begun to assert herself and press forward with daring plans to someday rule House Do'Urden. And now entered Kiri, her oldest sister, the first priestess of House Zorlaren, with a greater chance of ascension than she. Sarabel found herself wishing that Matron Mother Xerith would return and assume command of the house. Surely that would destroy her own plans to become Matron Mother Do'Urden, perhaps forevermore. But better Xerith and her even hand than the volatile Kiri. You are a Banri now, Sarabel whispered repeatedly, trying to convince herself that she would survive the reign of Matron Mother Kiri. Or maybe, she thought, she could quietly whisper in Tiago's ear, and let Kiri deal with his family should it come to that. I will be Matron Mother Do'Urden, she stated, nodding. She thought then that perhaps she should go out into the Underdark to find her mother. She could preemptively warn Matron Mother Xerith that allowing Kiri to assume the throne of House Do'Urden could bring dire ramifications to the remnants of House Zorlaren. But she shook her head at that unsettling possibility. She would throw in with Tiago, she decided. If Kiri got in her way to the throne of House Do'Urden, Sarabel would find a way to use Tiago to be rid of the witch. Sarabel was pondering the benefits of being part of three separate families, Zorlaren, Banri, and Do'Urden, when word came of an urgent meeting in the audience chamber. She rushed across the compound to find Kiri, Ravel, Tiago, and Jamis already in attendance, along with a couple of house soldiers who had recently returned from the outer corridor patrol. Matron Mother Darthir was there too, sitting in the back like an ornament, and what more might she be? The patrol members were in the middle of recounting their tale when Sarabel neared the group. They hadn't bothered to wait for her, clearly. She shot a sharp glance at Kiri, who pretended not to notice. Sarabel sighed, but it was cut short when she finally realized the subject of the tale, and the weight of it. These drow, a formal patrol of House Do'Urden, clearly marked as such, had been attacked in the streets of Menzo Berenzon. We must inform the ruling council immediately, Sarabel blurted. Do shut up, said Kiri. And when Sarabel looked to Tiago, she found him looking back at her with open disgust. Likely rogues, Kiri went on. What of Braylon Jankay? The scouts shrugged and shook their heads, too conveniently, Sarabel thought, as if they had been coached. Was it Bregan D'Earth then? Kiri asked Tiago. To what end? Jamis added, his skepticism clear. Jarlaxle hates Tiago, that is common knowledge, said Kiri. Jarlaxle sides with the heretic Drizzt, Tiago added. Sarabel stared at her husband, trying to read him. Given his honest reactions and expressions to Kiri's startling deduction that Bregan de Earth might have perpetrated the ambush, Tiago didn't seem to be in formal league with Kiri, thank Lolf. But he was no admirer of Jarlaxle, and particularly not now, when he was convinced that Jarlaxle had played more than a minor role in foiling his attempts to kill the heretic in Gontalgrim and elsewhere. Equally intriguing to Sarabel was Jameis's reaction, though. He clearly wasn't buying this theory Kiri had floated, and indeed seemed more than a little suspicious of Kiri herself. That might be a lead worth following, she noted. We should use this to defer from any further patrol responsibilities, Kiri said. We should prepare for an assault on our house, Jameis countered. This was a brazen attack in a time when the ruling council has forbidden such infighting. Bregan de Earth does not listen to the ruling council, Kiri replied. If it was Bregan de Earth, Jameis countered. We have no evidence. Who gave you permission to speak to me in such a manner? Kiri asked bluntly. You are a nephew to Matron Mother Xerath, and with no direct line to the throne of House Zor'Lauren, yet you address the first priestess of your house with such familiarity. Jameis shrank back. Your pardon, First Priestess Kiri. If it was Bregan de Earth, then they have Braylon, apparently, Ravel remarked. In that case, they know much of our house defenses. A third of our warriors were culled from the ranks of Bregan de Earth, Tiago said. They know everything of our defenses and are inside our line already. Despite his dramatics, the others really didn't seem too alarmed at his claim. Bregan de Earth had indeed supplied many of the House d'Oerden soldiers. In the beginning of the new house, Jarlaxle himself had been among that group. But Jarlaxle had slipped away and had replaced nearly all of his Bregan de Earth veterans with new recruits plucked from the stench streets, houseless rogues who offered little threat to House d'Oerden. Indeed, if it came to a fight with Bregan de Earth or anyone else, those new d'Oerden recruits who did not outright flee would almost surely fight for this house, their only real chance to survive with any dignity in what might come after. Sarabel found herself off balance, as did Jameis and Ravel, she noted. She would be wise to hold some private meetings with those two, perhaps. And now you serve me, Matron Mother Jindia Malarn said to Braylon Jonkay. The beaten rogue stood naked, his arms stretched out to the sides by taut chains affixed to stout metal poles. Two of Jindia's priestesses sat at the base of those poles, occasionally casting minor arcane enchantments. Stinging jolts of lightning coursed the metal to Braylon's singed and smoking wrists. They cast their little spikes of torture quite often, too often for them to be actually casting the spells. Likely they possessed magical items with the magic stored for easy access, such as rings or wands. Or more likely, Braylon realized, the brutal Malarney had constructed this torture location right in their chapel, with such magic built into the securing posts. He wanted to get a look at the contraptions, out of simple curiosity and a desire to be distracted. But every time his eye wavered from the spectra of Matron Mother Jindia Malarn, who was sitting on a wide-backed chair with its metal twisted and etched to resemble a spider's web, with 1,000 arachnids scrambling about, the priestess behind him whipped him with her scourge. Braylon had not been very familiar with the Malarni in his days in Menzo Berenzon. Like every male in the city who was not of House Malarn, he wanted nothing to do with the Loth Zealots. They were a particularly cruel lot, even by the standards of Menzo Berenzon. And they loved their driders and had warped more drow into the eight-legged abominations than any other house in the city, than any 10 houses combined. Braylon winced. If you will have me, I will willingly serve House Malarn, Braylon replied. I am glad to be back in Menzo Berenzon. He gasped and groaned as the priestess behind him struck him brutally. The snake heads of her whip bit and tore long lines into his flesh, their poison igniting new fires so painful Braylon hardly registered the repeated jolts of lightning searing the flesh of his wrists. At least try to be clever, Jindia Malarn remarked. Do you think I accept your loyalty? Do you think me fool enough to ever allow one of Jarlaxle's lackeys in my ranks, and a heretic lackey at that? I am no heretic, Braylon managed to spit out, before he got struck again, and again, and again, and again. Nearly unconscious, his sense of time and place stolen by the blistering, tearing, and searing agony, Braylon was surprised to find Matron Mother Jindia standing right in front of him, yanking his head up so that she could look him squarely in the eye.
And a mere male at that, she added with an evil laugh.
She spat in his face and whirled away.
Turn him into a soldier for the army of Lady Loth, she instructed. And Braylon knew he was doomed.
I do not understand, Matron Mother Quenthel said when Manolan Fay guided her and Mistress Sosumtu to one of Evenel's antechambers. At Quenthel's instruction, the Illithid Methil followed. A new construction lined the left-hand wall, a series of 10 separate cubbies, each with a single seat large enough for one person to sit. They were designed so that someone sitting within could see out into the room, but could not view anything in any of the other compartments. All of them now had easels, facing out and each holding a painting of a different drow woman, naked except for a belt of pearls and a gemstone-studded tassel, and in exactly the same pose. These were all painted at the same time, Manolan Fay explained, and by 10 of Menzo Berenzon's most renowned artists.
Interpretive, Sosumtu remarked.
But not so, Manolan Fay explained. They were instructed by the subject to paint her exact likeness and warned not to stray. Quenthel wore a curious expression. She looked from the paintings to the empty divan, imagining Evenel sitting there in the pose depicted, then turned back again to the paintings. Several of them were quite similar, but none exact, and often with differences too distinct to be an accident. Evenel's hair was white in a few, pink in another, blue in a pair. Nor was the cut ever exactly the same, and in the most disparate instances, not even close. The same was even true of the hair on her loins. Matron Mother Beerton did an 11th painting, with the same subject and the same instructions, Manolan Fay explained.
And of course they are interpretive, said Sosumtu, but Quenthel cut her short.
Did the artists regard the work of the others as they painted? The Matron Mother asked.
No.
Then when they finished, did they compare?
No,
Manolan Fay answered. They finished and they left. And each was, in turn, congratulated by Evenel. And each believed his or her likeness perfect. Quenthel reasoned, nodding with every word as she began to catch on.
As did my mother, said Manolan Fay, a perfect representation of the subject,
whose painting of Evenel was also as she sees the young woman.
Sosumtu looked at Quenthel, seeming at a loss.
Which do you think most resembles Evenel? Quenthel asked her. The mistress of Arak Tynaldis studied each briefly, then pointed to the third from the far end. Quenthel looked to Manolan Fay, who answered by pointing to the painting nearest them, which drew a curious look from Sosumtu.
We are not seeing the same person when we look upon Evenel, the matron mother explained. We each see our own version of her.
Manolan Fay followed, nodding at her revelation.
And is she not among the most beautiful, most alluring women you have ever witnessed? Asked Quenthel.
The most disarming, Manolan Fay remarked.
Her very being is enchanted, Sosumtu said. She is cloaked in deception,
in illusion, Manolan Fay added.
Everything about her, said the matron mother, her tone more of admiration than anything else.
She gave a little laugh.
She lets each of us paint our own image of perfection upon her, and gains advantage in that. Are not the most beautiful prisoners the most difficult to torture? Do we not listen more attentively to people we consider attractive? Do we not hope for beauty to succeed?
Unless we know better concerning the motivations and intentions of the beauty in question, replied Sosumtu, whose tone was much less admiring.
What does she really look like, I wonder? Asked Manolan Fay.
It does not matter, said Quenthel. She is no doubt beautiful, and adds the deception to elicit appropriate and helpful reactions from those who look upon her. Perception is everything in this matter. When we look upon another, I might see innocent beauty, where another would see sensuality and the promise of carnal pleasure, where another might see plainness. With our dear Ivanel, though, it seems we see her as she chooses. "And where is she?" asked Sosumtu. "And what do you suppose she might do to you if she learns that you brought us to see this?"
"I do so at her bidding, priestess," Manolan Fay replied.
Sosumtu's eyes widened, but Quenthal began to laugh.
"Because she does not care that we know,"
the matron mother explained. "Ivanel is secure now that she is in control. She is pleased to let us view this great achievement. And can we deny that it is exactly that? What power must it take to maintain such a distinctive illusion? Perhaps she shows us this to learn if we, knowing now the truth, can see through her facades." She gave a helpless little laugh. "Though I am confident that we will not. And so is our dear Ivanel, no doubt." It was obvious to the other two that Sosumtu wasn't very happy with that answer, but she said nothing to deny it. She stood there, shaking her head, again studying the paintings as if looking for clues. Finally, she simply shrugged and sighed and let it go. What could be said, after all? Matron Mother Jindia's audience chamber was right next to the chapel. Close enough for her, First Priestess Kiernil Malarn, and their guest to hear the screams from Braylon as his long and excruciating transformation began.
"You are interested in the ceremony?" Jindia asked her guest, seeing the priestess staring at the wall with clear intrigue.
"I have only witnessed it once," Kiri's Orlaren replied. "When I was much younger, I have heard that it is quite satisfying."
"Immensely," Jindia confirmed.
"But it would not do," said Kiri. "We cannot have Braylon seeing me here with you now."
"There is no danger," Kiernil explained.
"When Braylon walks as a drider, he will remember nothing but the agony of this day. And for the rest of his miserable days, if any thoughts against Lolth or the matron mother he serves enter his head, he will revisit that agony. He could never find the strength to betray your secret."
"Do they suspect House Malarn?" Jindia asked.
"House Doerden is full of clever nobles now," Kiri replied. "I have led them astray, as we agreed, into thinking that Bregendy Erth likely ambushed their patrol. But that theory will not hold long, particularly if the wizard Jameis is somehow in league with Jarlaxle, as we believe."
"We should move quickly, then," said Kiernil. "We must move quickly, particularly if these other whispers from the tunnels prove true," said Jindia.
Kiri looked at her curiously.
"A sickness of the mind," Matron Mother Jindia explained. "Some say it is the thinning of the Faerzris. Others pose that the presence of the demon lords in the Underdark is the cause of the madness. But we know better. It is House Doerden, its mere existence, that offends Lady Lolth. It will not stand."
She looked directly at the First Priestess of House Orlaren and qualified the remark.
"Not in its present form."
Kiri nodded. They were going to tear down the hierarchy of House Doerden, murder that abomination Matron Mother Bayenri had placed on the throne, and replace it with a house to the liking of the Spider Queen. It would be a house devout, in Malarn's own image, a house that would correct both the abomination of Matron Mother Bayenri and the wayward path Matron Mother Xerath had steered for House Orlaren at the same time. And it would be a house with males put in their proper place in accordance with the edicts of Lolth at long last. If the fall of the abominable House Doerden also led to the fall of House Bayenri, might the new Zorlaren quickly ascend the city's ranks? The thought teased Kiri, particularly if they could wrangle an alliance with their once arch-rival, House Barrison Dalarmgo. The promise of glory for the Zorlarens remained, if the family had the foresight and the courage. The promise of a new House Devout, in Lolth's favor, and in alliance with the new powers of Menzo Berenzon. House Malarn,
and House Barrison Delarmgo. House Zorlauren, led by Matron Mother Kiri.
What else did you give to the child beyond the memories of Evenel the Eternal?
Quenthal asked Methil later on when they were alone.
I did as I was instructed,
the illithid answered in his gurgling voice.
Much as I did for you.
Much. But not all, Quenthal accused. There is more than simple illusion at play with that one. But it is not magical illusion at all, is it?
I am quite sure that it is, Methil answered. Your mother had some understanding of the old illusionary magic, and I know that this child was quite attentive when those memories were imparted.
More than that, a frustrated Quenthal retorted. A simple illusion would alter Evenel's appearance somewhat. Even I can do that, and I cared little for that part of your instruction. It is not difficult for one skilled in the art to simply alter her appearance, but what Evenel is doing is beyond that. She is not merely altering her appearance, but subtly managing the expectations and desires of each individual who looks upon her. Even multiple individuals in the same room with her at the same time, and she's doing it in a way that will gain her the greatest individual advantage over each observer.
Indeed, and she is doing it continually.
How?
I do not know, the illithid replied. Her sensitivity to the perceptions of others is instinctual.
No, she took this from you, Quenthal said. When your tentacles were in Manolan Fay's womb, this baby, this creature, took more than you were offering. She borders on the mind magic of the illithids if she is not fully there.
You would be better served in directing this to Lady Lolth, Methil replied. I do not doubt the power of Evenel. She is as strong as the Eternal.
I am as strong as the Eternal, Quenthal snapped back. Methil didn't answer, and the matron mother understood that as a clear repudiation of her claim. And she knew, to her ultimate frustration, that Methil was correct in his assessment.
The powers come so easily to her, Quenthal lamented, more to herself than to the mind flayer.
To maintain such a ruse,